ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of May 28th, 2019. And this is episode number 395. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And what a perfect day to be broadcasting, talking about the paranormal, the spooky, and the unknown. It's heavy lightning outside. We got flooding winds. I think I saw some lady on a broomstick with a tall hat fly by a second ago. I don't know what's going on. Some girl with ruby slippers, I think. Anyway, we got the rain, the lightning, and so you may hear some thunder in the background here in the studio. But never fear, as long as I can keep my feet above the water, we're going to get through this show. We've got a lot of news for you. We're back from a week-long break from last week, so we got a little catching up to do, and there's been some really interesting stuff happening, especially over the weekend. Some kind of, I don't want to call it late-breaking news, but probably some stuff maybe you haven't heard yet that's slowly trickling into the paranormal news wire, and it'll probably be popping up mid-week here, but we're going to talk about it tonight. So tonight we're going to be talking about some crazy German tourists. There's some strange stuff going on out there in Loch Ness, and they've got a way of these German tourists are trying to lure the Loch Ness monster out of the water, and we're going to talk about that and how you can contribute. You can do this yourself. You can do the same thing here, and going to talk about a very kind of a sad story. It's kind of upsetting to me as well. It's unfortunately something I've talked about just a couple of years ago, actually 3 years ago. The Pope Lick legend claims another victim. We're also going to talk some UFO news. I know everyone's excited about UFO stuff. It's pretty big news right now. The 12 best places for UFO fans and 5 traits of UAPs. That's the new trendy word for UFOs. Forget UFOs. That's too 1950s. We don't call it that. We call it UAPs now, I guess. 5 traits of those that defy logic. And we'll also talk about a very important story. You're going to want to stay tuned for this one. Dutch UFO fleet. A UFO fleet sighting kicks off a controversial constellation that's going to be taking place. It's called Starlink. And if you haven't heard about that, well, you're going to hear about it tonight. And you're not going to be happy about that one. We're also going to talk about Amanda Teague. That name rings a bell. Well, she's been mentioned here quite a few times on this show. She's actually a fan of the show. You know, she liked a few of my tweets a few years ago about about some of her stuff. And she's having some relationship issues, also some health issues, which we're going to talk about tonight. And somebody mentioned in the chat room, Bigfoot. Anything Bigfoot? Well, kind of, sort of. One big event coming up this weekend, and some of you guys are out there probably like, thank goodness, we're tired of hearing you talk about this each and every week, Brian. Jeez. Every week you're talking about the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure. Fear not, it's taking place this weekend. And I'm oh my gosh, I can't even talk about it. It's going to be such a good time. Unfortunately, I'm only going to be there half of the time this weekend. I have some other things going on Sunday, so I'm going to have to leave, I don't know, either late Saturday or extremely early on Sunday. I'm going to try to squeak it out. But I have a big thing going on Sunday. But looking forward to Friday and Saturday, hanging out with a lot of old friends and meeting some new people out there as well at the PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure, May 31st through June 2nd at Benner's Meadow Run Campground in Farmington, Pennsylvania. If you haven't got your tickets, well, you're too late. The only way to get them is to buy them from somebody else. And I'll give you $1,000 for mine. Maybe $2,000. No way. I'm still going to go either way. Well, I'm a speaker, so I have kind of don't have a choice. The event, yes, is sold out. So if you don't have tickets, don't show up. They're not going to let you in. They're going to turn you away, and it's kind of a long drive. It's kind of out in the middle of nowhere, but it's actually across the street from National Park there, too. So what a battle site. So, you missed out. You've been talking about this for a while. You don't have your tickets. You missed out. But you're going to hear a lot about it. I actually kind of announced now, I guess. I won't have a show next week because I already know I'm going to be so excited about this event. It's going to take me about a week to come down off of this. And probably won't have a lot of show prep time. So, yeah, we're not going to have a show next week. But I will probably be talking about this in 2 weeks when we come back. But it's going to be a really big, really big event. There's going to be some celebrity guests, including the Appalachian Investigators Mysterious Sightings, or AIMS. In other words, the guys from the Mountain Monsters television show. They're going to be making their second straight appearance. Bill Brock, host of the television show Monsters Underground, will be there. Ken Gerhard, Dr. Jeff Meldrum, as well as Cliff Berrickman of Finding Bigfoot. Really excited to meet him. I've had a few events very close to here that I've not been able to catch up with him yet. So looking forward to meeting him and chit-chatting with him as well. Stacy Brown Jr., who was on Spike TV's $10 million Bigfoot Bounty, which we've talked about here on the show. Also a filmmaker, musician, and he searches for the elusive skunk ape in the Florida swamps. Been down there as well and visited Dave Sheely's skunk ape headquarters down there. Really, really interesting place down there. And I'll tell you what, if any place I've ever visited, and I've obviously live here in Ohio, I've been in Pennsylvania, Southern Florida, I've been to Washington State hiking. I tell you, of all the places I've been, you wouldn't think the swamps of Southern Florida would be an easy place for a creature to hide. But I'll tell you what, there is just so much space down there. And you can get turned around and lost even in 5 feet of walking off of a path. It's crazy down there. So, a lot of celebrity guests, but there's also 12 and a half speakers that will be speaking. I'm not the half. No, that's not me. Not me. But I'll be there speaking. Ron Murphy, Steve Coles, Dave Dragason, Rick Fisher, Stan Gordon, Jay Pachochin, and his son Blake is the half. Well, I don't know. Maybe Jay's the half. I don't know. We'll find out. Jay is going to be debuting his Finding Jay, his movie. This guy is a really good filmmaker, producer in his own right, and a great cryptozoologist as well. I'm really looking forward to seeing this. And Paul G. Johnson, Dave Spinks, David Weatherly, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, as well as the 2017 Cryptozoologist of the Year and a brilliant filmmaker in his own right, Seth Breedlove, will also be there. I'm really looking forward to this. And I'm excited to say that Saturday morning, I will be opening the show. And normally, there's two places I don't like as a speaker you don't want to be. You don't want to be the guy that comes back after lunch. People are usually coming in late, they're tired, they're going to fall asleep on you. But you also usually never want to be the guy that opens the show. But this one, I am excited to open this show. It's going to be crowded there, even early in the morning. And again, really looking forward to this. I could talk on and on, I know, but you don't want to hear it. But anyway, looking forward to this event. Rosemary Ellen Guiley is in a lot of stuff. I've actually been at a couple of ghost events with her. She did a seance at one building. She did usually a lot of ghost stuff, but yeah, she's into the cryptozoology stuff as well. And am I camping at the event? Not this year. Not exactly. kind of sort of camping, but you can call it glamping, I guess. Normally, I sleep in a tent out there, but this year I had the opportunity to stay a little off campus, I guess you'd say. It's really nice to sleep in a tent right there. 2 years ago, or I guess it was 3 years ago for the first event, I was probably within a stone's throw of the stage sleeping in a tent, which is pretty cool. You got to put quarters in the machine to take a shower and take a shower with cold water. So it's not really something that if you're not used to camping that is very easy to get through, but I loved it. It was extremely cold, wet and rainy, and miserable, but I loved it. Loved every minute of it. And 2 years ago for the second event, we had storms, we had rain, we even had hail. And it was funny because it didn't matter how bad the weather was, we had an excellent time. Now probably this year it'll be scorching hot, probably humid as well, but looking forward to getting out there. We're going to have a lot of workshops in addition to the speakers, as well as taking people out on day and night hikes over the weekend, which is one of my favorite things, especially when the kids are there. You can teach them and talk to them about cryptozoology and Bigfoot and teach them what to look for. As far as sign is concerned, that's basically seeing what's walked through the woods. It's really fun to kind of show them things that maybe they're not aware of that's happening around them. So anyway, you'll hear more about that, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks when I come back from that event. And if you're interested in kind of hearing what's happening or seeing what's happening, be sure to keep your eyes peeled to our social media. I'm probably going to do a lot of stuff on Instagram. So that's Instagram.com/ParaNewsInsider. And Facebook is, I don't know, sometimes it's a little challenging when you're out there in the woods. I may do some stuff there. And if I do that, it'll translate into Twitter. But trying to get some stuff on Instagram, especially some pictures, definitely over the weekend of some of the people that are there and some of the festivities and different things we may hopefully encounter. So keep your eyes peeled on the social media this weekend, especially Instagram, for some inside information and inside stuff happening at the 2019 PA Bigfoot Camping Adventure taking place this weekend. And hats off to Eric Altman for putting this on once again. He did a heck of a job the first 2 years. Had to take a year off last year. It's a lot of work to do one of these, and I did one on a small scale. I can't imagine everything he's had to go through with this large event. And with that, we're going to jump into the news. Yes, there is some news here this week. A lot of news, a lot of stuff to get through. And it's just kind of all over the place. There's some really sad stuff. There's some really scary stuff. And stuff that's going to kind of make you a little angry. So hang in there. We got some pictures, too, of all of this. And we're going to start it off with a nice, sweet story. Yes, sweet. Maybe not the way you're thinking of sweet. But anyway, years ago, I heard, I don't know who I heard it from, but I have heard it from different people, especially in my neck of the woods here in Northeast Ohio, about a rumor that Bigfoot likes to eat Tootsie Rolls. I don't know if just the chocolate ones or the ones that have flavors like vanilla and I believe it's cherry and lemon, I think, is another one. I don't know if he likes the flavored ones or just the regular chocolate treats. It kind of looks like a scat a little bit, but obviously he probably likes them unwrapped for ease of eating, I'm sure. And I've always wondered how that particular candy was decided upon and if it actually worked, as well as if there's other things out there that people think that Bigfoot is attracted to. I know a lot of people, especially out west, use apples. And I know in PA we did that as well on a couple of hikes, that we put apples and other fruit out there to lure Bigfoot. But usually that sugary stuff pretty much attracts anything and everything. And yes, definitely, especially Sasquatch loves his beef jerky. Definitely. Thanks, Mike. That was good. And, well, the Germans, I think they figured something out here. I think they found a sweet spot to help find not Bigfoot, but the Loch Ness Monster. Yes, German tourists have been spotted throwing gummy candy, made specifically by Haribo, into Loch Ness in hopes of bringing the creature to the surface. I'll tell you what, I enjoy gummy candy. It's one of my vices. It's one of those things, it's a habit I can't kick. I love the stuff. I don't know why. I'm a grown-up. I shouldn't be eating that stuff. Sugar is bad for you. It's made out of, like, carnauba wax and all kinds of weird stuff. But, I can see why a creature might enjoy them. They're gummy, and some of them are shaped like fish and animals and sharks and frogs. But why Haribo? And why gummy candy at all? You know, I did look up the ingredients for this. So Haribo products are generally just corn syrup, sugar, gelatin, dextrose, citric acid, starch, artificial and natural flavors, of course, fractionated coconut oil, whatever fractionated is, also carnauba wax, beeswax coating, and artificial colors. So what's the deal? I mean, yeah, sugar maybe? I don't know. So Loch Ness Monster Hunter Steve Feltham also noticed this odd behavior by some of the tourists, and he got to the bottom of the mystery. Basically just went up and asked people. So the idea of tossing gummy treats, specifically made by Haribo, into Loch Ness comes from a German commercial, which came out about 2 years ago. Now in the commercial, a tour operator is not having much luck at finding the Loch Ness Monster. And if you ever see this commercial, I'll put a link in the chat room to a story that has a link to the actual commercial. I don't know if it's the German version or the American version. I think the first problem here is that they're all standing on the shoreline. But anyway, I digress. As his patrons begin to get a little bit bored, he gets an idea and pours gummy treats into a bowl, and then starts showing off by throwing them high up in the air and catching them in his mouth. Now, suddenly, the Loch Ness Monster surfaces behind the tour operator, and the crowd begins to gasp in awe. And, of course, the tour operator thinks it's because of the entertainment that he is providing by throwing these things up in the air and eating them. The Loch Ness Monster swims a little closer and, as you can probably guess, catches one of the Haribo treats in its mouth before retreating back into the water. The tour operator, meanwhile, never sees the creature, but does look around to figure out where that last piece of candy went that he tossed high in the air. So I guess this commercial has influenced people to buy candy and throw it into the water. Gosh, no, don't do that. I wonder how it's damaging the lock, you know, sugary gummy bears, poor gummy bears drowning in the lock. Granted, there's all sorts of different gummy treats, and if you see the commercial, it's all those really horrible ones that probably can pull people's teeth directly out of their mouth. It's kind of weird how TV influences people, or, you know, this imagery. It's obviously fake. It's not really the Loch Ness Monster coming out of the water, but, you know, people are really influenced by this, and no, the Loch Ness Monster is a huge, huge tourism piece. And we've talked about it, how much money that is generated by tourism because of people coming out to view the Loch Ness Monster. There's numerous tour companies, boats and things that take people out on the lock. And I guarantee you right now, there's some heavy orders of Haribo candy rolling into some of these areas that sell t-shirts and different things, gas stations and everywhere right now. They're probably stocking up once this story broke. And maybe, that would be great if Haribo introduced a Loch Ness Monster-themed gummy candy. They should do that. I don't know why they didn't. Maybe they do. I don't know. I'll have to look. But anyway, that's a weird, wacky story to start off the night. And I do have a link to that story that I'll throw in the chat room. Possibly. Okay, maybe. And I think the story here does have a video attached to it. So if you're in the chat room, you're going to get a little behind the scenes to the show. You get some of these links before. I generally will publish these during the week after the show is out, so you can see some of the links that I use for some of these stories. Now, when these stories are put onto some of the bigger news generators, such as The Anomalist, Unexplained Mysteries, and other bigger blog sites, sometimes they just use ones that are used that are generated by Google, you know, news announcements and things like that. But I'll scour these stories and I kind of look at these stories and kind of try to find one that has new news or new information or more information than just somebody who saw the story, maybe copied it and came up with their own kind of thing. So do a little bit of work. It's kind of a journalism thing, which I enjoy doing. Now, one thing I don't enjoy doing is talking about this next story or a story similar to this one. And this is extremely unfortunate and not really one that I want to talk about due to the graphic nature and the unfortunate incident behind this. But this does serve as kind of a reminder and a warning to those who are involved in the paranormal and those who, you know, do legend tripping. And, you know, there's a lot of people that I've seen over the years and even was involved with 20 plus years ago, about 23 plus years ago when I first broke into the field as a ghost researcher, ghost investigator, you know, kind of started in a variety of different ways for me. But one thing that happened was people that I knew wanted to go out and investigate some of the local urban legends, especially up here in Northeast Ohio. There's a lot of places. You know, we have Melonheads and Helltown and a lot of different things that occur up here in Northeast Ohio. So there's a lot of people out there traipsing in the woods and looking all around for some of these things. And trespassing is one of those things that comes with that territory sometimes. And I did not want to have anything to do with that. For legal reasons, plus it's just, you know, putting yourself in harm's way. And, you know, we've heard of different things that have happened over the years. You know, I could tell you one that happened here in Ohio, in Columbus, a few years ago. Unfortunately, a man was upset with teenagers that were trespassing, and he shot a girl in the head. And she suffered permanent brain damage from this. And luckily, she wasn't killed. But this is... These are things that happen. And one story that was kind of hoping I'd never have to talk about again, which 3 years ago, a little over 3 years ago, I talked about this story. And it's about the Pope Lick Monster. Now, the Pope Lick Monster is a scary-looking monster said to reside under a train trestle that passes over Pope Lick Creek. It's about 90 feet up in the air, which is pretty high. It's pretty high, and I have some pictures that I'll share of that here in a couple of minutes. The creature, meanwhile, is said to be part man, part goat, or even part man, part sheep, depending upon who's telling the story or what source you're getting the story of the Pope Lick Monster from. There are many legends attached to this creature. I've heard all kinds of stuff, including claims the creature actually jumps down from the trestle on top of people's cars. Another states that it appears to those who dare attempt to cross the trestle, causing them to jump off and avoid this scary-looking creature, as well as its purported bloodstained axe that it carries with it, of course. Most legends in this area, you either have an axe or you have a hook hand or something like that. There's also the legend that says that it uses hypnosis or voice mimicry to lure people to the trestle to meet their death by an oncoming train. So to kind of paint a picture here, this, again, is 90 feet up in the air, a train trestle. This has no way for anyone to stand on the side. Basically, that train comes through. You only have a few inches on either side of this on the rails. And this trestle is, let's see, 772 feet long. That's pretty long. And if you're halfway out there, that's a long run to get back to the beginning of that. And unfortunately, people do trespass, and this has been an ongoing thing. So back on April 26, 2016, the episode number 262 of the Paranormal News Insider, I did talk about the gruesome incident that took place back on April 23, 2016, where a 26-year-old woman was killed while stranded on the tracks when an oncoming train struck her, sending her 80 feet down to the ground to her unfortunate death. The woman, whose name was Roquel Bain, was a mother of one, a one-year-old boy named River. She was, again, unfortunately pronounced dead at the scene. The man she was with on the trestle, David Nee, lived to tell the tale and said that he did not hear the train until it was about 40 feet away and coming very fast towards them. They had no time to react. His only reaction was to basically jump off the side to the extent of just hanging on to the rail with his body dangling to the ground below. While the train flew past for nearly 5 minutes, while he fought to hold on through the train vibrating. I mean, it's a heavy thing, trains, and the trestle was vibrating, and you know, he's lucky that he was able to hold on. And unfortunately, during this process, he witnessed Roquel struck and thrown to the ground. And obviously nothing he could do but hold on for his dear life. Now, Nee was charged with a misdemeanor, trespassing on railroad property, but the incident left him in a condition of what he described as, quote, mentally crushed. And you know, again, this is 2016 to April. Nee had a degree in criminal justice and was in the middle of an extensive application process to work as a corrections officer, but he has since sought the treatment of a psychologist who diagnosed him with post-traumatic stress disorder, and he's on medications for anxiety and depression. So that's something to think about here. I mean, these decisions can have lifelong consequences if you're able to live through it. Norfolk Southern Railway, which operates trains that go over the trestle, they blame a 1988 film called The Legend of the Popelik Monster for interest, as well as some confusion about the monster, as well as the frequent trespassing at the site. In the movie, one of the characters did hang on to the rails, but railroad officials state that this would be very difficult, if not impossible, for most people to do as the train clears the 772-foot-long trestle. Again, it takes 5 to 7 minutes for the trains to pass through, and there's extreme vibration, let alone the wind going by. And, you know, you're talking about wood trestles. It's not something that I would want to even attempt without a train there, let alone having to hold on for dear life. The Popelik Monster was also featured in Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America and is featured in many legend-tripping ghost and cryptid websites and books. And I've read a lot about it from books from that region because there's a lot of paranormal stuff that happened in the Louisville, Kentucky area. Waverly Hills, for example, is pretty close to that area, and that's unfortunately where this couple had been or was actually going back to prior to visiting the Popelik Monster back in 2016. So there's currently an 8-foot-tall fence with signing warning people not to trespass, and many are under the impression that the tracks and therefore the trestle are no longer in use, even though the sign says that they are in use, and trains do cross that trestle several times a day. So obviously, you may wonder why I'm talking about this, and obviously, it's happened again. Sadly, another person was killed on the trestle this past Sunday night. A pair of teenagers were caught on the trestle when a train approached at about 9:30 p.m. on Sunday. Both teens were female, and both were struck by the oncoming train, And according to the Louisville Metro Police Department, one teen was pronounced dead at the scene, and the other was transported to a hospital in critical condition. The sister of the teen killed in the accident responded to a tweet about the incident, stating that the girl did not go onto the tracks looking for the Popelec monster, and that she was merely looking for a thrill. But either way, it's just not, it's, again, not the kind of stories that I like talking about. And definitely my thoughts are with the families of those affected by this tragedy. But there's an important lesson for those of us who have learned to put our fears aside in various forms that go out into the night looking for these types of creatures or ghosts or UFOs or whatever your thing is. You know, we've learned how to ignore fear and go into situations that most people would run away from. And we have to be careful. We have to think about these things and the consequences, either legally or with our lives. I think it should go without saying that trespassing, in all honesty, it's never acceptable. You know, and I've talked about a lot of stories here on the Paranormal News Insider over the course of the last 10 plus years about people dying from a lot of different things, old structures being burned down by carelessness, people being arrested. We've had one where a few weeks ago where this community center was vandalized to the point of no longer being of use to the community that it's supposedly supposed to serve. And, you know, these are people that are looking for ghosts. So, you know, we have to do what we can within our fields, hopefully to police this kind of behavior. And unfortunately, it doesn't seem to work a lot, but we have to think about it as teams, as individuals. And obviously, most of these people that do these things are not organized as teams. You know, if we have these places in our backyards, we should do what we can to kind of look at the resources where these people are getting this information and make sure it's correct and that the warnings are out there that you will be arrested for trespassing, for going on places like this, and that this, especially here in Popelec, that people are aware that this trestle is active and that people have been killed, numerous people, over the last few decades here. And, you know, it happens a lot. We've actually other stories of people being killed in train accidents just through paranormal things, let alone by other accidents and different things that happen all the time. I mean, again, trespassing, never acceptable. I mean, having a little adventure is a good thing. I mean, be safe about it. Be smart about it. When you put your life and the life of somebody else at risk, it's never a smart decision. I don't care what you think or, you know, what the thrill thing is for or what you're doing it for or who you're doing it with or for. And I can only hope that the story keeps people from doing this. But it seems that the past has not served as warning enough. And again, a terrible tragedy, not something that you really want to talk about. But, you know, we got to talk about things like this to keep people from doing these same things over and over again, because it's, you know, it's, somebody might get away with it once in a while, but I tell you what, if you're out there 300-400 feet out there and a train comes that fast, I don't care who you are, you're going to have a hard time getting out of there. And it's a horrible way to go. It's a horrible way to die. And I would not want to wish that on anyone else out there. Yeah, well, fences are only so much. If people don't pay attention, people don't heed the warnings, then what good is a fence? I mean, I think I said it before, 3 years ago, I said they should electrify a fence. But even then, you know, the train's got to pass through there, so the train goes through that location. I mean, short of putting up a camera, I don't know what else you can do. There's, you know, you can go online and see pictures of the fences that warn people that it's an active track, and yet people are still continuing to do this. I mean, it's a dare thing. Can I make it down the tracks without a train coming? I mean, what teenager, what young person has not wanted to do something scary and dangerous like this? I mean, that's kind of where a lot of the ghost hunters have come from. ghost investigators, want to challenge fear and challenge, take that risk. But unfortunately, it turns out taking the life of somebody. So into UFO news we go. And UFO news, I'll tell you what, it's been blowing up lately. Really been taking off, and it's kind of really reassuring to see the UFO field, which I was kind of wondering about there for the longest time. You see organizations like MUFON kind of shrinking and kind of going away, but now the government's back talking about UFOs and seeing strange things, and TV shows popping up left and right. What's going on up there in the skies? Well, the Travel Channel has offered up another article on the paranormal. It seems they're really jumping on this bandwagon. This one deals with the 12 best destinations for UFO fans. The first of which is the UFO Watchtower in southern Colorado. This area is known for UFO sightings as well as animal mutilations. And a wide open view of the sky, which is what would lure me out there, definitely. Because of the fairly dark conditions due to the remoteness of this area. So this is an area where you see a lot of those, time exposure pictures of the sky. You can see the Milky Way and all those things. Dark skies, it's very inviting. You can see a lot of stuff up there. And they actually have this tower built. All right, you can go up there and watch the sky. 360-degree view. You can also camp out there. Sounds very inviting. Wouldn't mind putting that on my bucket list. Also on this list is Vernal, Utah. This area is in northern Utah, close to the Dinosaur Valley Monument, which is another place I want to head up to. And other parks as well, as well as the place that maybe you know. I don't talk about it too much here on the show, but you might be familiar with this. You might have heard of this place. Skinwalker Ranch. I know a lot of people who follow the paranormal obviously know what Skinwalker Ranch is. And this place also has very dark skies. A lot of less light pollution. Of course, also on the list is Roswell, New Mexico. So I think that's on every single UFO list of anything and everything. If anything, you may not see UFOs there, but you do have the International UFO Museum and Research Center, as well as the yearly Roswell UFO Festival to look forward to. And there's also a number of restaurants. There's a McDonald's shaped like a UFO, and the I talked about a couple of months ago, the Baskin Robbins. Duncan. It's so hard to say Duncan without the donuts part, but I guess they changed their name to Duncan. With a giant alien standing on top. So a lot of stuff to see out there in Roswell. You can also go see the mailbox out there and see how far you can get into the Area 51 without being chased or stared at through binoculars. Don't recommend that. There's also the Aurora, Texas UFO incident, which occurred back in 1897, where a UFO purportedly took out a windmill, as well as killed the passenger, or maybe the driver of the craft, tossed out after crashing into this windmill. The alien pilot was then purportedly buried in a local cemetery. And then, of course, parts of the craft were thrown down a well. Now, a lot of people take this story seriously, but there's been a lot of talk about this over the last couple of decades, that this was just basically a piece of folklore to get the town some attention. Apparently, the railway moved away and towards some other bigger cities in the area, and the town was just trying to get some attention. And during the time, many UFO buffs have taken the story so seriously that there have been many attempts to find the body, as well as parts of the aircraft and various wells in the area. It's been featured on a lot of TV shows, too. And one of my favorites on this list is the Kecksburg UFO incident that took place back on December 9th of 1965. A huge fireball was seen in the skies numerous states, but this fireball eventually fell near this area of Kecksburg, but did not act like a typical meteor as it actually steered in the sky as it slowly made its way to the ground and crashed. And every July, there's a UFO festival held in the town. And trust me, it's out in the middle of nowhere. You're driving, and there it is. There's Kecksburg. I was lucky enough to be one of the four speakers there a few years ago, actually a couple years ago, when my latest book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator, came out and actually debuted it at that event. And a replica of the UFO sits atop a platform. It's like an acorn shape. Sits atop a platform behind the Volunteer Firefighter Station in Kecksburg, which was actually created for the television show Unsolved Mysteries back in the 80s. And it's pretty close to where the incident happened, a couple of miles away. Also on the list, Area 51, of course, and the Extraterrestrial Highway located in Nevada. And let's see, another one here. The Marfa Lights in Texas, which many say are just car headlights. I don't know. I've been close to there, but wasn't able to actually travel out there and see them for myself. I'll put that list in the chat room, a link for that story in the chat room. And again, don't worry if you're listening live, but you're not in the chat room. Well, you're welcome to join us. There's a little bit of room left for you in here, but if you can't listen live, I get it. I totally understand. But I do appreciate you listening to the show. And those links will be provided during the week through Facebook, Twitter, and that's about it. So I don't really do the links through Instagram at all, really. Through Twitter and Facebook, if you don't like those, well, not too bad. That's where you're going to get the information from the show, the links. Otherwise, we'll see you in the chat room. And more UFO stories. And this is another kind of a blog entry here. The History Channel, well, they're chiming in with their own thing here. Their article titled, "These Five UFO Traits Seen by Navy Fighters Defy Explanation," with the subtitle that says, called the Five Observables by a former Pentagon investigator. They include hypersonic speed, erratic movement, and the ability to fly without wings, unquote. This article surrounds Luis Elizondo, who used to run the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, or AATIP, or ATIP, however you want to say that, and now works with the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Sciences, as well as some of the cases that became public as surrounding this story. So some of the traits described by some of these cases highlight the differences between known craft and those that defy explanation and may go beyond unidentified flying objects. I'm sorry. We don't say that anymore. Unidentified aerial phenomena. Straight to something that could only be described as not from this planet. Now, the first trait is anti-gravity lift. So no flight surfaces or identifiable means of propulsion is not technology that we currently have here in the United States or anywhere that we know of, and would certainly be concerning if we observed this from an aircraft. So no wings, no propulsion. No way. Now, the second trait would be sudden and instantaneous acceleration. So in some instances, maneuvers were described as such speed and direction changes that no human could possibly survive the G-forces created. And even mechanical means would be questioned whether or not it would be able to survive such traumatic changes in not only speed, acceleration, but deceleration of movement as well. The third trait, hypersonic velocities without signatures. Basically, this means aircraft leave signatures when traveling faster than the speed of sound. We see shock waves. We can measure that in a variety of ways. At least they're supposed to. Now, many UFO encounters defy this known observation. And how do they do that? We don't know. The fourth trait, low observability, I guess that's how you would, normal person would say it, or cloaking. Let's stick with cloaking. So cloaking or observability. While this sounds like something out of Star Trek, you know, cloaking or, I don't know, some of the other shows that are on, some observations report a glow or a haze around some of these objects, and they're partially invisible or see-through, not completely opaque. And sometimes radar is unable to track these objects that are clearly observed. The fifth trait is transmedium travel. Transmedium travel. Sounds kind of weird, but basically what that means is some UAPs have been seen traveling between environments such as space, the Earth's atmosphere, as well as through water, with really any kind of major change in going through these separate things. So we know if a space shuttle were to come out, or any kind of craft were to come out of space into the atmosphere, it's going to burn up. It's going to have send out shock waves. It's going to have a change in how it flies. And especially a craft going through the air, suddenly going into water, it's going to have quick deceleration. Usually airplanes don't fare so well going into water. They may float for a little while before sinking. But these aircraft have been observed going from air through water like nothing. Like, it's just still flying through the air. And some craft have been observed on sonar, so underwater, traveling faster than 70 knots, which is about twice as fast as the quickest nuclear subs. And are these advanced technologies from another country or another world? Well, luckily, pilots will not be as afraid as they have been in the past to log these reports. And time will tell when these traits will pop up again by witnesses, and maybe trained witnesses as well. And hopefully we hear about these things and the government doesn't sit on them for another 20, 30 years like some of these cases. But some interesting stuff happening in the UFO world, and it's a good time to be hanging around this stuff. And let's see what else we got. Well, big story here we'll talk about real quick here. Really interesting story, kind of depressing in a way, and kind of spooky and scary for some of these people that saw this. So over the weekend, a frenzy of UFO sightings flooded into a Dutch UFO reporting website in the early morning on Saturday, Friday and Saturday. And good luck with your show, Jim. Jim Mallard's going to have a really great guest. I'm going to have to jump over there. Good friend Dave Considine is going to be on the Mallard Report tonight. Really looking forward to that. Call my good friend. I haven't been able to talk to him since. Certain events have happened in his family. So want to look toward that show tonight after this show is over, of course. And I'll try to get you guys out of here on time so you can switch channels. And anyway, this Dutch UFO reporting website, observers saw what they described as a train of stars moving high up in the sky. Over 150 reports flooded the UFO Meldpunt Netherlands website with a couple of photos showing a string of white lights in the sky. Now, this mass UFO sighting turned out to be caused, wait for it, yes, from a SpaceX Falcon 9 launch. That's the new word for swamp gas, I guess, nowadays. SpaceX Falcon 9 launch that took off from Cape Canaveral, Florida at 10:30 p.m. on Friday night. The rocket then began to release 60 separate satellites at an altitude of 280 miles. The satellites then had to use their own thrusters to take up a position in low orbit at about 342 miles above the Earth. Each satellite weighs around 500 pounds, and 60 satellites. It sounds like a lot, but unfortunately, it's only a taste of what's to come in the near future. A dozen more launches will soon occur, which will eventually place about 800 satellites that will be in stationary orbit over this particular area, which will help provide internet coverage for this part of the world. And 800, well, that's nothing. That's still just the tip of the iceberg. Well, who do we blame for this? Well, Elon Musk. Now, first it was a car, and now it's about 12,000 satellites. They're going to be headed into geostationary orbit surrounding the Earth, providing internet coverage in what's going to be billed as Global Space Internet. Global Space Internet coming soon to a planet near you. This project is called Starlink, and it's got some scientists concerned with Ronald Drimmel from the Turin Astrophysical Observatory in Italy, saying, quote, "The potential tragedy of a mega constellation like Starlink is that for the rest of humanity, it changes how the night sky looks. Starlink and other mega constellations would ruin the sky for everyone on the planet," unquote. Anyone ever see Highlander 2? Yeah, it doesn't exist in the Highlander timeline, but it kind of reminds me of that, how the built this dome over the Earth and it changed. Could never see the sky again. Anyway, the fear was realized when observing this first batch of Starlink satellites, as they were easily tracked from the ground and were much brighter than many thought that they would be. Now, there's actually video of these streaming through the sky. It's kind of scary. These satellites, like others already in space, will easily reflect sunlight basically after the sun sets and before it rises. So a few hours, once the sun sets, it gets dark where you're at, probably around till 1 o'clock, midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, and then not till about 3-4 o'clock in the morning. Between that, you won't be able to see them at all. They'll be pretty much invisible. But in those just after sunset hours, they will reflect, can reflect, I should say. I believe they're also called iridium flares. There's another term for it as well. But they'll catch sunlight up in the upper atmosphere that you're not able to see with your eyes and reflect it straight down. And I love watching satellites do this. I love tracking certain satellites and the International Space Station, of course. This sounds scary. Sounds like I might need sunglasses. I'm going to do this anymore. This could have a lot of cascading effects for visual telescopes as well as radio telescopes due to the frequencies that these telescopes will be operating on. However, just like existing satellites, once the sun is gone from the upper levels of the atmosphere, so too will the effect of reflecting sunlight back to the Earth. So it's not as if they're going to cause night to turn into day. And we've had stories about this in the past. There was this satellite that was launched that was going to do this on purpose, created twinkling, and it didn't really work out so well. So Elon Musk responded actually to a tweet questioning how Starlink will pollute the night sky. And he basically stated that with 4,900 satellites remaining in orbit, the 8,100 satellites launched over time, with only 1,900 of those 4,900 actually doing anything useful other than being a large cue ball in the sky, no one really notices anything on the ground, and that it's going to have no impact on astronomy. He says that telescopes will need to be moved into orbit anyway in the future. Okay, as long as he's flipping the bill. Well, I, for one, can attest that I've seen plenty of satellites flash in the sky. So it's not something that no one sees. And if you're careful, you do see quite a few of these in one night, if you know how to look and you know what to look for. And adding 12,000 medium-sized satellites is certainly not going to help the already crowded skies over the Earth. Starlink will have two separate flocks of satellites. Yes, flocks. With one having 4,409 and the other having 7,518. With the second flock flying at slightly lower altitudes. Other companies are getting on this, along with Elon Musk. Amazon is on board with this project, and they're already launching their own satellites as well. So, again, the goal of the Starlink program is to bring internet to about 3.3 billion people who are not connected or who have subpar connectivity, as well as to help enhance the infrastructure of crowded metropolitan cities as well. The FCC approvals stipulate that half of the planned satellites must be in place within the next 6 years. And these 60 satellites that were already launched cannot provide anything as far as coverage, as more satellites will need to be put into place to provide even low coverage. And who's going to pay for that? Who's going to pay for global space internet? It's beyond me, especially those who can't afford the infrastructure for regular internet as it is. I mean, I guess goodbye are the days of the balloons. But these satellites are going to cause a lot of UFO sightings over the next few years. I can all but guarantee it. Now, to me, I don't know. This could be a tremendous waste of money and resources. And really haven't heard too much of this. This actually has been going on for about 5 years. I've been talking about doing this. And suddenly just launched up there, clogging up the skies. 60 satellites, not much. But people saw them. And it's just going to get worse as we head closer to 12,000 of those things flying around the Earth. Yikes. Anyway, last story for the night. Kind of a scary one, I guess, but kind of a feel-good one as well. Amanda Teague, she's back in the news this week. She's been off on the hunt talking about her exploits. Married to a ghost. She's also known as Amanda Sparrow Large Teague. Yes, Sparrow. She's a Jack Sparrow impersonator, as well as the woman who married a 300-year-old pirate named Jack Teague. And, well, of course she thinks he's a 300-year-old pirate named Jack Teague from Haiti. We've seen a number of stories of women who have decided to give up living men for ghosts. Not good for the ego. Anyway, Amanda claims that she began to have health issues about 2 weeks into her marriage with the ghost known as Jack. Of her experience, she said, quote, "I started getting reoccurring abscesses, and I was suffering from cirrhosis. About 4 or 5 months in, when these things started to go really downhill, I went back to some people that had communicated with Jack. I know the symptoms of possession, and part of it is ill health. So I was concerned that it was to do with the relationship because of the timeline. But I was assured that he was a lovely spirit who wouldn't harm me." But that didn't help. Things continued. She decided not to have sexual contact with Jack, which purportedly helped her briefly in her health situation. However, a friend of hers married a different ghost, because again, this is getting around. This is the thing to do, I guess. Amanda then got intimate with Jack once more, which again triggered more health issues, and she was eventually rushed to the hospital after developing sepsis. So Amanda decided that Jack, well, he had to go, but he said he wasn't going to. And Amanda told him if he wouldn't leave, she would have to have an exorcism, which basically led to Jack threatening to kill her. Sounds like a soap opera. Well, last December, she decided to get an exorcism and rid herself of Jack once and for all to get her health back. And now she's given up her spiritual work and, of course, has written a new book titled A New Attitude, which highlights her ghostly experiences, which, of course, is available on Amazon. And is this the last of Amanda and Jack? Well, stay tuned to As the Ghost World Turns, I guess. I don't know what else to call it. But yeah, I doubt it. I think we're going to hear about Amanda and Jack again in the future. Yikes. So thank you for hanging in tonight. And thank goodness the storms held off for me and able to get this show in the can. Big thanks to my producer, as always, for putting out this show here on the Paranormal King Radio Network. And again, just a viewer, I guess a listener note. You don't really view this. I guess you could view it, but listener notice that we will be taking next week off. Probably not going to have too much time to put on put together a quality show for you. So I'm going to take another week off. It seems like I've gone more than I'm here. But anyway, I will see you in 2 weeks. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. Above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting out.